program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lee Normudu, and welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says Pakistan and Afghanistan must intensify efforts to halt the spread of the crippling polio virus. This includes better screening of travelers heading abroad. The WHO warns that vaccinations of international air travelers in Afghanistan are not being tracked, quote, and no exit screening and restriction of unvaccinated travelers has been implemented at international airports. According to WHO, no cases of wild poliovirus have been reported in Africa since Somalia on August 11, 2014. Nigeria marked its first year without a single case on July 24, reaching a milestone. However, Madagascar has had 9 cases of vaccine-derived poliovirus this year. Polio attacks the nervous system and can cause irreversible paralysis within hours of infection. Where do we stand in the fight against polio? We'll discuss this and more on the show today. Joining us via phone from Cape Elizabeth, Maine, is Mike McGovern, chair of the Rotary International Polio Plus Committee. Mr. McGovern, welcome to Health Chat.
Yes, good evening. Good to be with you today.
It's good to have you with us. And also joining us via phone from Geneva, Switzerland, is Sona Barry, spokesperson for polio eradication at the World Health Organization. Ms. Barry, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. Let me remind our listeners that if you want to join the conversation, you can call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can also email us your thoughts and questions at healthchat@voanews.com or post them on facebook.com/voahealthchat. We'll discuss the issue in a moment, but first, WHO has announced that Somalia is free of the poliovirus after no case of the illness was reported in the past 1 year, as I mentioned earlier. Now, the Somali Ministry of Health and its partners hope to announce full eradication of the virus in the next 3 years. Abdulaziz Bilo reports for VOA from Mogadishu.
After years of massive vaccination campaigns against polio, the World Health Organization and the Ministry of Health jointly declared Somalia polio-free.
Since 1 year, we have no polio case in Somalia. We hope that our vigilant, our surveillance system will continue, and inshallah, after 3 years, if we will declare after 3 years eradication of polio from Somalia.
For years, Somali health authorities, with the support of UN agencies and the World Health Organization, worked to vaccine millions of Somali children, mostly under the age of 5. The virus has sickened many children in south-central Somalia, formerly under the control of the terrorist group Al-Shabaab.
In 2013, we recorded 189 cases of polio in Somalia. That was the biggest population of all cases combined in the world. So we're optimistic about the latest development, and we hope to put more efforts in vaccination and to the parents. Polio has no cure, only prevention.
Polio is a contagious viral disease that can cause paralysis in its victims. This child in a displacement camp is a living example of how serious the polio virus is. He can't walk like normal children, but only crawls. To avoid any repeat of this crisis, the Health Ministry and its international partners have promised to step up the immunization program all across the country. Polio remains endemic in 3 countries: Afghanistan, Nigeria, and Pakistan. Until poliovirus transmission is interrupted in these countries, all countries remain at risk of importation of polio, especially in the poliovirus importation belt of countries from West Africa to the Horn of Africa. Abdulaziz Bilo for VOA News, Mogadishu.
Again, Ms. Barry and Mr. McGovern, thank you so much for joining us. Now, let me start with you, Ms. Barry. Somalia has not reported any case of polio for the past year. What does this mean for the country at this stage?
It means that Somalia has, for the, I think, third time, managed to stop polio within its borders. Now, when you think about what Somalia has been through in the past 20 years, that's an incredible achievement. It means that across factions, across divisions, health workers have been vaccinating children. Parents have been protecting their children. And Somalia now, despite all its difficulties, has managed to reach this stage again where hopefully no Somali child will again be paralyzed mm-hmm. by polio.
Okay. And it's really surprising, as you mentioned, the fact that, you know, we know that the country has been going through some turmoil for quite a while. Mr. McGovern, when you look at the way they were able to achieve this, what can you tell us? What did it take?
It really took the work of a very large partnership, quite a bit of surveillance, quite a bit of focus on the immunity gaps, throughout the Horn of Africa. The last time there was an outbreak, there was a significant regional outbreak response, and there's also strong cooperation from the citizens there. Surveys have been done. Do you think the vaccine is safe? Is important to have your children vaccinated? And there's very strong support for vaccinations. People understand that it does make the difference helping that their children not become paralyzed. But really a cooperative effort, support of the governments that are there, and work with WHO, UNICEF, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, the Gates Foundation, and Rotary International, all working together with the citizens and with very brave health workers as well. We always need to remember particularly the health workers who go into some very difficult areas and work to see serve to see the children are immunized.
Now, you mentioned so many different things, a combination of efforts, whether it was human resources and other. One of the things that you mentioned is the fact that people are understanding the importance of vaccination. Vaccination has been at the center of controversy. It's in some parts of Nigeria and other countries where religious leaders were skeptical about its safety. Now, earlier today in my TV report, I also had a story about some bishops in Kenya that were becoming skeptical about the safety of the vaccine. So it seems like they were taking us back to where we were a few years ago. What can you tell us, Ms. Barry, about the issue with the way people feel about vaccine in general, but not vaccine in general, just the polio vaccine, the type of challenges that you have seen in your work before in convincing communities about the safety and the importance? Is it something that is still very much on going, or has it gotten better?
It's very timely that you asked this question, because this week, for the first time actually, WHO has published a series of papers on what we call vaccine hesitancy. Because as an international health organization and in the polio partnership, we recognize that it is not enough to give people a technology or a medication or a vaccination. We need to take into account what drives people to protect their children. Now, anybody who's refusing vaccine, who's suspicious of vaccine, is also just trying to protect their child. That's what's important to remember. Everybody has their child's best interests at heart. Mm-hmm. So what we've learned through the past years with polio eradication, and particularly through the example of Rotarians, because they are members of their community, is we've learned that it's really the community leaders, the traditional and religious leaders in every part of the world that win the trust. And in fact, you will find that the vast majority of people in this world are very accepting and even demanding a vaccine. But the few who have a variety of reasons to be hesitant are the ones where we've learned that activating those networks of trust is so important for people to trust both the vaccine but also the vaccinator. Mm-hmm. And I think those networks have included, as I say, Rotarians, but also village elders, religious leaders of all religions, and traditional leaders as well.
Very interesting that you mentioned that, because Mr. McGovern, as the head of the Rotary International, and with the work that you do along with other members, being on the ground, meeting people, Ms. Barry mentioned you know, activating the network of trust, where do you start?
Oh, I think, you know, you start with the Rotarians, you start with the lady health workers. You know, it's, you know, where I live in the United States, you know, I can remember my mother collecting money for polio research, and it was really with all the mothers that it started here. And you know, and I think it's that way around the rest of the world. You know, there was a study done by Harvard and last year, you know, and it looked at the areas, conflict areas in Nigeria, and whether or not people accepted the polio vaccine. And 96% accepted the polio vaccine in Borno in Nigeria. 88% of parents said they believed that oral polio vaccination for their child was a good idea. It, you know, it really starts in the home. It starts with the various community leaders, and it does start, as Sona mentioned, with people like Rotarians. They're known leaders in the community. They're respected elders, younger people, men and women, and it's all of this working together, as well as the medical professionals that are there as well. It's truly a team effort. That, you know, really, if you look at the whole world, since it has begun, there's about 13 million children who aren't paralyzed as a result. It's pretty amazing progress that has been made.
Now, let's talk about the case of Nigeria, as you just mentioned it. We know that Nigeria was one of the three polio endemic countries that remained the past few years. What did it take for Nigeria to get to this point, and how do you foresee this country in terms of the next 2 years to be declared polio-free, hopefully, Mr. McGovern?
Yeah, you know, Nigeria, you know, has had good progress over the years. Obviously, some of the conflicts there did provide some setbacks in more recent years. But even in the areas where some of the non-governmental elements have been in the forefront, you know, some of their leaders have looked toward the importance of vaccinating children. We have been able, the Global Polio Eradication Initiative has been able to, you know, increase environmental testing and, you know, and actually, you know, the children themselves testing when there's different issues. You know, everyone has worked cooperatively on that. The former government was helpful with the polio program. The new government, the new president of Nigeria has already publicly, in a public video display, has immunized his own grandchild. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what really made the progress. But, you know, there was the establishment of emergency operation centers where every case was tracked. There were laboratories set up where everyone could see where the particular cases were. So it really enabled everyone to do real targeting of where the virus might possibly be and to step up immunization sort of in those particular areas to make sure that it was attacked. But, you know, cannot overemphasize enough the support of government at all levels in Nigeria. For, you know, making investments and for getting it done. You know, even today, the Nigerian government is investing $80 million in the polio eradication program. They've increased that amount every year since 2012.
Okay. Now, Ms. Berry, Madagascar has had 9 cases of vaccine-derived poliovirus this year. Now, why is it reported that Africa has seen no cases given Madagascar's outbreak? What is the difference there?
What Africa has done, in fact, appears to be stop the transmission of wild poliovirus. This is the virus that we initially set out to eradicate. And that's the tremendous milestone in Africa. It's that wild poliovirus has not been seen for a year. Now, when we use oral polio vaccine, which is the vaccine that has been used everywhere in the world to stop transmission in a community in all countries, that vaccine in very rare cases can mutate back into a paralytic form of the virus. So when you have, you're giving oral polio vaccine in a setting where there's very low coverage, maybe you're vaccinating 40% of the children or sometimes in some countries, even fewer. In those settings, in rare circumstances, the virus that's contained in the vaccine can revert to a paralytic form. And now we are aiming to also stop that virus. Now, how do we stop that? By, in fact, increasing coverage and making sure that enough children are vaccinated, because these vaccine-derived polioviruses only arise in places with very low coverage, where immunity is very low. So we are now embarking over the next year. We will be withdrawing that type of vaccine slowly in a phased manner. And we are also in Madagascar mounting a full response. But in answer to your question, the difference is, for example, in a 10-year period, wild poliovirus in the first decade of the century paralyzed about over 1,500 children. And at that same time, vaccine-derived polio paralyzed about 500 children. So the risks from vaccine-derived polio are much, much lower. And in fact, they can only be diminished by using that vaccine more and making sure more children get it.
Okay. Now, I'd like you to please perhaps explain a little further, because we had questions. Like, I had a question by Pauline from Ghana who asked before that she said, I heard that the polio vaccine can cause paralysis. And from what you just said, if you could just clarify, because mm-hmm. I don't know if that question is a bit related to what you just said, but please clarify that for us.
Sure. It is a related question. So in a million doses of the oral polio vaccine, okay. one dose may cause paralysis in the child who gets it.
Okay.
That's what we call vaccine-associated paralytic polio. So I am vaccinated and I develop paralysis myself.
Okay.
The difference between that and vaccine-derived polio is vaccine-derived mm-hmm. polio is, first of all, even rarer.
Okay.
And it also doesn't happen to me when I'm vaccinated. I may be protected, but I pass it into the environment in my stool. And in an environment where many of my comrades and my birth cohort, my age group, are not vaccinated properly, mm-hmm. this virus will move from person to person and become a paralytic virus.
Okay.
So it's a much rarer virus, mm-hmm. but they are both represent the risk that oral polio vaccine poses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I just in answer to the question that you received,
mm-hmm.
it's a dilemma. It's an ethical issue that every country faces when they stop wild poliovirus. So, for example, in the United States, the last case of wild polio was sometime in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
The United States continued to use oral polio vaccine for more than 20 years after the last case of wild polio, because the risk is much, much greater from wild polio than from the vaccine itself.
Okay. Okay. We have a question from Emeka in Nigeria, and Mr. McGovern, I'll toss this to you. Ms. Berry, feel free to react after him if you have something to add. He asked, how does a polio threaten nations that are already declared polio-free?
Could you repeat the question again?
How does polio threaten nations that are already declared polio-free?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm having a little difficulty hearing the middle of your question.
Okay. Huh? Hey, basically, what he would like to know is how does polio remain a threat to countries that are already declared polio-free?
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. There's always the opportunity for outbreaks for polio to be imported from one area, exported from one area to another.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's been a danger, you know, as long as I've been trying to deal with polio. When you have low vaccination levels in some country, and someone goes to that area that has the polio virus in their system, there is the danger of it spreading. You know, the really good news, you know, we talk about this August 11th anniversary in Somalia as being, you know, the last case of the wild poliovirus over, you know, in a year's period in Africa. But what's almost as special as that is that it's also the first time we've gone for a year without an outbreak in an area that was thought to be polio-free. You know, and I would like to mention one other thing. You know, Africa, we had our last case in Somalia a year ago, but it has not been certified polio-free. There are still concerns about, that there may be some reservoirs of polio that we're not aware of it. There may be this danger of outbreaks. And we need to continue the immunizations. We need to continue the program. We need to continue the efforts. Certification of it being polio-free, the Afro region of Africa, would only take place after there'd be 3 years without a wild polio virus, and there's belief that there's been adequate surveillance. So, we're not out of the woods yet. We're feeling optimistic. We're feeling positive. We appreciate all the support of the governments, all of those who are getting the vaccinations. But we have not been certified polio-free yet. So still danger of outbreaks. The surveillance may not be up to where we'd like it everywhere, and there's still the possibility of virus coming back to countries where it is polio-free.
Okay. Now, Ms. Barry, WHO just warned that the vaccinations of international air travelers in Afghanistan are not being tracked. So could you explain the impact of international travel in the transmission of polio, not only in Afghanistan as well as globally? Perhaps that would, emphasize a little bit of some of what Mr. McGovern talked about in terms of transmission between countries.
Yes, as Mike said, the polio virus is a very adept traveler. So you or I at this moment might have polio virus in our system. We wouldn't necessarily be affected by it or sickened by it at all, but we would be carrying it. Mm-hmm. So you get on a plane and you land in a place that has very poor coverage. And you are shedding that virus in your stool and you are infecting people. And that virus will find a child who is not vaccinated. This can happen. We've seen through the past 20 years, virus from Nigeria has traveled as far as Indonesia. Virus from India has traveled as far as the Democratic Republic of Congo. So we know it's a first-class traveler. It's a frequent flyer. What we need to do when we are down to so few places with polio is to, in fact, ramp up the effort in those places, which will be the source of all virus. So we need to turn off the tap at the source. Mm-hmm. But we also need to protect the rest of the world, which is polio-free. Mm-hmm. So the World Health Organization has an international agreement called the International Health Regulations. And any of us who travel internationally have a yellow vaccination booklet. That's something that falls under the international health regulations. Mm-hmm. Under those international health regulations, one of the mechanisms we have is recommendations to countries to help stop the international spread of a disease. And now that only these two reservoirs, really, of poliovirus remain, we need to make sure that the virus doesn't travel out of those countries. It's a way of protecting those countries, boosting immunity in Pakistan and Afghanistan, but also making sure that people leaving those countries are not carrying the virus out with them. Mm-hmm. We had a big outbreak in the Middle East a couple of years ago, Syria and Iraq. In the middle of civil strife and war, they were also carrying a polio outbreak, and that polio virus came from Pakistan. So the International Health Regulations and the committee that has just renewed these recommendations is saying, let's make sure that we can protect Afghanistan and Pakistan and that we can protect the rest of the world from any virus from those countries.
So you mentioned the yellow booklet, which I do have one. And what's in that booklet really is yellow fever. So when you talk about the recommendations from WHO to countries, do they have some type of is there some type of enforcement, or this is really left to the country to decide? Because I don't remember I may not travel as much as you, but I travel a little bit, and I don't remember ever being asked if I was tested for polio, or is it assumed that I was, if I was vaccinated, or is it assumed that I was vaccinated? I'm trying to understand how this works, because mm-hmm. I know about yellow fever. They will make sure that you have that. But
exactly. Mm-hmm. The thing is that these recommendations for Afghanistan and Pakistan right now are what we call temporary recommendations. So they're not going to make their way into the yellow booklet. Mm-hmm. However, if you have a yellow booklet and you're traveling from Afghanistan or Pakistan, you should be asked at the international border to show proof of polio vaccination. And that's what we're trying to recommend that countries do, while also supporting these countries to do that. These are not easy places to obtain a vaccination certificate.
Mm-hmm.
The health systems are not necessarily up to what we would consider easy standards for that. So it's also a question of supporting these countries to do that, and making sure that their immunity is high enough so that these recommendations can ultimately be lifted once polio is eradicated.
Okay. Now, Mr. McGovern, when you go in a given community as a Rotarian to talk to people about the need for vaccination and even other work that you do, what are some of the challenges that stand in the way when attempting to vaccinate every child in a given community or country?
You know, I think, as Sonia, Ms. Barry mentioned, it's primarily not something you just do when you go to a community and you return and you leave. It takes a continuous effort by individuals in that community to get the message across, to point out the benefits of the vaccine, and to point out the risk. Rotarians who do it, for example, I was in Pakistan recently, and, you know, they were sponsoring cricket matches between young children that were sponsored, you know, by the Rotary clubs, with a strong emphasis on signage and banners and other activity indicating the importance of eradicating polio. It's not just, you know, telling people they have to do it. It's understanding the importance of it and seeing it as part of everyday life and part of everyday activity, receiving these vaccinations. I think particularly in the communities that have suffered so much from polio, mm-hmm. they can look, in their own communities and see the people who are paralyzed. And, you know, I just don't think that there's any better case made for the need for vaccinations and the need to eradicate polio when you see, you know, the hundreds and thousands and millions of people across the world who have suffered from this terrible disease. Seeing the people who struggle so bravely, are an inspiration to all of us. And, mm-hmm. They are the ones who best get the message across of the importance of vaccination.
Okay, we're getting ready to wrap up, but before we do, Ms. Barry, let me ask you the last question. What do you perceive as the necessary final push to end polio globally?
I think it's to stop polio in Afghanistan and Pakistan and to stand behind those countries and those communities as they do it, and all the while making sure that Africa sustains this progress. So this is a question of political will from the community level up to the top government levels.
Okay. Mr. Mike McGovern, Chair of the Rotary International Polio Plus Committee, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And
thank
Sona
you
Barry,
time.
Spokesperson for Polio Eradication at WHO. Thank you. And for more on today's subject and the campaign to end polio once and for all, join us on our website, voanews.com/health. And thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. Join us on Facebook and let's keep the conversation going. Just look for VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Bunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.